I want to thank you all for hanging in for this whole hour and a half, and I'll be doing the final presentation here. But before I start, I do want to thank the entire panel. Actually, to bring this full circle, Leslie Kowaleski, who began this session, really given her leadership with the Big Five project, has really helped catapult us to a point, at least within the March of Dimes, to be able to do what Connie was talking about. Yes. You know what? It sort of didn't happen, but if you want it, you know, that's okay.
Yeah, so
do you want to ask a question? Go ahead.
I wanted to ask, both are fairly brief, but I wanted to know if there was an overall reduction of C-sections for the Hart-Scott hospitals.
We didn't track C-sections for all. Mm-hmm. The only data we collected were on the schedule.
Right, okay.
But among the schedules, there were.
Right, okay.
Overall C-section rate, we don't know whether or not.
Okay. Any other questions?
We're tracking that in California,
yes.
But we won't have it. Right now, it's only about 30% of Institute of the Heart Stop.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
We get a higher number, and then we'll probably do that now.
We had a couple hospitals report out that we had that their primary C-section rate had declined during the period.
Yeah.
But we didn't like speculate saying we didn't collect the data.
Okay. Any other questions? How do you got nurse buy-in?
That was easy.
That was easier than docs, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think
good
the
question.
Toolkit, what the toolkit does is it really provides the playground for everyone to come in and talk and really work together. So it was really a wonderful piece that was really, helped to galvanize the team around change.
And they didn't have any problems doing more night shifts, too.
The nurses didn't want to be in the middle of a doctor being challenged, like you don't have a medical indication, and
right.
So the way that the policies are set up is that they just say, you don't, what you listed here is not on our list of accepted medical indications.
Right.
And so then they would say, well, this is what I want to do. And they said, well, no problem, I'm going to give you Dr. So-and-so. So it was actually the doctor, the champion, who had to step up. And then they had to get on the phone and say, okay, what's the indication? And it was the doctors who said no, not the nurses. So I think that was really critical.
That's great. Okay, I think we have to move on because I have 8% power left apparently in this on this laptop. Not quite sure it's plugged in, but we're going to get some technical assistance. So, are there any other burning questions?
Yes.
Okay, so I was giving Leslie kudos, just bringing this full circle in terms of the Big Five and what happened, and so I wanted to thank again Leslie Kowaleski, Becky Russell, and Connie Mitchell for being here today. So let's give them a hand. And I get to do the final presentation here. So you heard about the genesis of this toolkit and the results from the Big Five Hospital Network. Connie presented a great her presentation that was great from a local perspective, and some of the challenges with data collection were raised here as well. And so what my task is to show you just two examples of what's happening on the national level from a public health standpoint in terms of partnerships. Hold on one second. So I got an error message that I had 7% power left on this, and it looks like it's plugged in, but maybe it's not. I don't know. Okay. So I'm going to present those two partnerships. Just to remind everyone, I know we have March of Dimes staff and March of Dimes volunteers here, but this is our mission, to improve the health of babies by preventing birth defects, premature birth, and infant mortality. We are coming upon our 75th anniversary. Can you believe it? That's actually a birthday cake, not a merit badge, for those of you who have kids in Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts. It kind of looks like a merit badge to me. Maybe we should make a merit badge out of it. I don't know. But that's coming up next year in 2013. Thank you. And so this, I had to show this slide. Becky Russell made this slide. It gets hot off the press. I just had to do, so we just received, our current campaign is to reduce preterm birth. And part of our call to action since 2008 has really been around this whole topic of reducing early elective deliveries, including late preterm, early term. And you can see our preterm birth rate has been going down. And what I wanted to point out here is we just got the preliminary data for 2011, and it's at 11.7%. So since 2006, we've been seeing this decline. So kudos to everyone out there. This is just another way to cut the data. You can see the majority of preterm births are in that late preterm range, 34 to 36 weeks. We do have goals that we're striving toward, and one of the goals is related to one of the two partnerships I'm going to talk about from a public health standpoint, which is that 8% reduction. So this is the 8x14 challenge that we, the March of Dimes, have in partnership with the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. There are other organizations involved, including AMCHIP, the Association of Maternal Child Health Programs. But state health officials, 48 of them so far, including D.C. and Puerto Rico, have made a pledge to try to get the preterm birth rate down 8% down to in their states. This is for the U.S. what the 8% reduction from a 2009 baseline would be. And then the other goal is a 2020 goal for the March of Dimes. So here's the first challenge. So this afternoon you'll hear a little bit more about this. Actually, if you go to the session at 2:30, which is in room 212, right around the corner, at 2:30, David Lakey will be talking about this challenge. He's the outgoing president of ASTO and the commissioner of health in Texas. An incredible leader, and has done a great job to galvanize this whole partnership nationally. And as I mentioned to you, well, so let me just tell you a little bit about the challenge. The core of the challenge is around a couple of different things. One, that a state comes out and says this is an important MCH issue, that we're going to reduce preterm birth, and that's also in the context of infant mortality reduction, because preterm birth drives infant mortality as well. We're going to raise awareness about this issue and do some interventions. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that, particularly the awareness piece, as we get toward the end here. And this is just a map that reflects what I just said earlier, that 48 states, right, Janice, still? We're still waiting on two. You can see them up there. I won't embarrass you here. But if you see your state there, please go back home and help us. Okay, so that's the ASTO piece. And just right now what we're doing with the ASTO leadership is following up with them specifically on what are we going to do in the state, what are we going to do locally, and how are we going to make an impact. And part of what's coming up, as comes up every year for us for the last 5 years, has been the release of our premature birth report card. That's actually being released 2 weeks from tomorrow. Right? That's amazing. 2 weeks from tomorrow. And part of what will be noted in that report card will be a note of those states who have taken on this challenge and have made a commitment. But I'm going to transition now to the other piece that has happened over the past year, which has been the Strong Start Initiative. Who has not heard of Strong Start? Oh, that wasn't fair, was it? So everyone's heard of Strong Start. I bet you heard of it because of a number of different things, including the grant funding that was made available from Strong Start. But let me tell you a little bit about it and just explain the partnership connection here. So Secretary Sebelius in February announced Strong Start, and it was quite an honor to be a partner with HHS as well as with ACOG and others. That's the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. We shared the stage with Secretary Sebelius, and actually to hear her say that preterm birth is an MCH issue was quite a day. I mean, she really put reduction of preterm birth at the forefront of our MCH agenda, and that was an incredible day. She announced Strong Start, and there are a couple of pieces of Strong Start. One is around a grant initiative to do enhanced prenatal care activities. I'm not going to go into details around that. Another piece is in November, we're actually doing a big push with the help of HHS around messaging, and I'm going to show you some of these. Messaging around waiting for labor to begin on its own if your pregnancy is healthy. So I'll show you some of those things if you haven't seen them already. And then the other part of it, and I'll talk about this a little bit more as well, is working with the Partnership for Patients. Now, this is sort of an interesting story, how this all came about. So I started learning about the Partnership for Patients, which started a couple years ago, and we had a meeting. So this was announced in February, Strong Start. Then we met with some folks from the Center for Medicaid and CMMS, Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services. Did I get that right? Yeah. And I heard about in March, well, there's this Partnership for Patients and these HENS, these hospital engagement networks. And there were 26 HENS that were being funded through the Partnership for Patients piece. So what we heard in Strong Start was the HENS were going to be leveraging the messaging around 39 weeks, around reducing non-medically indicated deliveries before 39 weeks, and part of their initiative to basically reduce harm, reduce readmission. They have 10 priority areas. One is obstetrical adverse events, and within that is to reduce early elective deliveries. This was tied, you know, with the Strong Start announcement. So Partnership for Patients was discussed, and so one of my tasks, just interesting just from a partnership development standpoint, was to actually find out, well, how do I get to the hens? How does the March of Dimes get to the hens to let them know what's going on? Some of the hens are really big. We call them, can I say it, the mother hen. The mother hen, for example, is huge. It's the American Hospital Association, the HRET arm of AHA. And some of them are state hospital associations. Some very small state hospital associations. Others are places like Ascension Health and VHA and others. So I was told you can do that in two ways. One, you go to our national content developer and work through them and get the message out. So that's sort of top down. The other is to reach out to the hens to make them aware of what's going on. So with the help of Kelly Ernst, who's right there, raise your hand, Kelly, our director of chapter programs, we actually reached out to every hen. And I think between June and now, we've actually spoken to almost every one of them, or at least tried to. And it's been really incredible. Many of them didn't really know what we had to offer, that meaning the March of Dimes, to help them with their goals to reduce early elected deliveries. This is what we discussed with those hens. And just, you're probably wondering, well, what was really attractive to them? Well, it's been really our educational materials mostly. Is that fair, Kelly? That's mostly what they've been interested in, and co-branding with us to get the name of their actual hospital engagement network or their hospitals or their Department of Health on these materials. It's really been quite successful. The first item, which I want to mention briefly, is the 39 weeks quality improvement service package. In the context of this presentation, what we've done is we've taken, so there's the toolkit, which is free. It's no cost, available on our website, CMQCC, as well. And we said, well, we're going to help hospitals reduce early elective deliveries. We can do this through a package of things which actually include a lot of the subcomponents under there, grand rounds or educational materials, and our data portal, which Becky heard about. So that is, there's a cost associated with that service package, all of those things, which has been a bit cost prohibitive for a lot of the hens. Although the March of Dimes right now, on a no-cost basis, we actually are partnering with 100 hospitals around the country, and we'll have another RFA coming out around that for soon, for next year. So that we have made available for up to 100 hospitals at no cost, except for the educational materials. So that's the partnership for patients piece, and the components I mentioned: the grant component, the work, the educational materials, and then the partnership, the educational materials, the partnership for patients. So I wanted to show you these materials that we're doing through Partnership for Patients, and you can see the co-branding down there with ACOG and HHS. This is our late preterm brain development flyer. It was actually, the genesis of this was actually in Kentucky. And this has been a very successful card, which shows the development of the brain at 35 weeks and 39 to 40 weeks, and how there's significant growth in that time period. This is a poster that can be used in physicians' offices. Healthy babies are worth the wait. This is all in English and Spanish, by the way. And this is our print public service announcement. I know Janice Bierman's in the room, and she's smiling because she really loves this one. This is called our cupcake PSA, and basically the message in this is, like, as I mentioned earlier, that babies aren't fully developed until at least 39 weeks. If your pregnancy is healthy, key point of the messaging, wait for labor to begin on its own. So I only have a minute or two left here, and I thought what I would do is I would show the television PSA that's actually going to be really pushed out there in November during Prematurity Awareness Month, which is just in a couple of days. And HHS is going to help us place this in very specific markets, including the Hispanic market and some cities with high African-American populations. So we're trying to reach some at-risk populations as well. So this is what we call our time-lapse pregnancy PSA. And I've seen this so many times. You know what? I just love watching it every time. So I'm going to show it to you guys. So there you go. So that really wraps our session. I just think for those of you who work in county health departments or even state health departments, hopefully this will inspire you in an aspect of the MCH world to tackle early elective deliveries if you haven't already, to partner with your local March of Dimes chapters and others, including ACOG, and I can go through a whole bunch of acronyms, AAP, A1, all those groups. We're all here to help. So we have a few minutes for any other questions. Happy to have discussion, hear from you all. It's a small enough group to hear for 5 minutes or so what's going on. Ann Uemoto has an announcement or a question. There's a sign-up sheet that's circulating.
There are 2 pages.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh. We should also let people know that the March of Dimes is hosting the Anglican Youth Award and talk afternoon at 4:30 in the Marriott.
So Agnes Higgins, 4:30, lecture and some snacks. In the Marriott Marquis at what time? I mean, at what room? It's somewhere in the Marriott Marquis.
Second floor.
Is a big sign, I think, there when you go in.
Be a big talk.
Yes. Anything else, Ann Uemoto? Okay.
Sorry, I've got a bit of a non-American background, so my 2 questions are
okay.
From that perspective. One, that clip you just showed makes me assume that there's a demand from women for early induction. Is that so?
Yeah. So do you want to ask your second question?
Second question is, given the rising cesarean section rates globally, could you ever imagine applying such a system, quality improvement service system, to emergency sections? Do you understand my
question? No.
So for the scheduled deliveries, you've used a classification system to distinguish non-medically indicated from medically indicated. Could you apply that same system to emergency C-sections, which we know are on the rise, and many of them are not medically indicated?
Oh, yes. So the second question is, can we apply this to emergency C-sections?
Yes.
I think the answer is yes. But as a physician, when I heard you say emergency C-section, to me, then that's an emergency and that's indicated. But maybe you're saying that maybe that's questionable. So I think having policies with very specific guidelines perhaps will help with some of that. I wonder, I don't know if there's data out there about this, what percentage of emergency C-sections are really not emergencies? I don't know if Connie knows, but that's a good question. And then the former question in terms of, is it the consumer, is it the provider? It was a question about C-section upon maternal request. You know, I've tried to find this data, and I mean, most OBs will say it's the patient that's asking me to deliver, right? But when I go and try to find the data, what I'm seeing is 1%, 2%, maybe 18% globally in terms of what percentage of the time it's actually the patient or the consumer that's actually asking for it. So the way I deal with this question, and I'm curious to hear from anyone else here, is it's not the consumer or the provider. It's both. Like, everyone needs to be educated. And I think that's like that brain card I showed, that resonates for providers. In Kentucky, when we did this in our Healthy Babies Are Worth the Wait initiative, I remember a chair of one of the hospitals saying, I showed this to my residents, and they will not induce or section because of that brain development that happens unless there's a medical indication. So I think that people assume that it's the patient. There is some data that Leslie mentioned from the Goldenberg study that came out a couple of years ago now. I think there's a lot of work we can do, and what we are doing at the March of Dimes to educate consumers or patients. But there's also, I think, a lot of work that can be done with providers, because the default has been, well, it's the patient that's asking me to do this, and they put a lot of pressure on me. Does that help? Sure. Yeah, Connie.
In San Francisco, yeah. When they first started their project, they reviewed every induction, and the committee of physicians tried to decide, is this medically indicated or not, and they looked at the medical record, because they wanted to try to put their own criteria whether and compare it to ACOG. That group of physicians said, you know, we could do this exact same thing for emergency. This whole process, it's just a matter of physicians being willing to provide that level of scrutiny and make those decisions and then set some parameters.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
With a lesson on this Medicaid reform, New York State has definitely been sort of the forefront of that. And there was a proposal during, you know, trying to bring down Medicaid costs to not cover induction less than 39 weeks unless there was a medical indication present, and same thing for elective cesarean prior to 39 weeks. And ACOG actually lobbied against that, mm-hmm. and they won. You know, I don't know if it's just ACOG.
This is in New York, you're talking about?
Yeah, in New York. I was very disappointed to see that they came out, you know, it's on their website, the letter they sent to Cuomo, you know, this is where our position. And I was like, wow, really? Like, without a medical indication, how can you be against this? Yeah. I mean, I know it's money, but it's also best practice. And just wondered if you could speak maybe about that.
There's a question around payment. Particularly Medicaid in states not paying for these early-term deliveries. Nikki Garrow's here from our government affairs office. I'm not going to put you on the spot, but just let me know how I do here. I think that the jury's sort of out on this in terms of the question is what's really effective. I think the providers are pushing back because, you know, in some states, because they're questioning, well, how is that going to be enforced? How are you going to define it? You've got to tell me ahead of time. I mean, there's always, I'm a provider, so I can say it. There's always something from the, right? They're going to, but the fact of the matter is there isn't any evidence yet to say that not paying will work, although that would be a fair hypothesis. There's some that believe, and there's some states that are doing, they're incentivizing this as opposed to punishing. And then there's a combination of something that, the way I interpret it, Nikki, is as holdbacks, where they'll actually hold back some payment until you actually show, and maybe give a little bonus on top of that in terms of how you're doing. So what we're doing at the March of Dimes is we're collecting what's happening, and we're watching what's happening in all these states, including New York. It sounds like that didn't go through. But in Texas, someone mentioned this earlier, that did go through, so there is non-payment. Now, I don't know. I was at a conference a couple of months ago, and it wasn't clear to me if that was actually being enforced yet. I just don't know. And we haven't heard a backlash from providers yet, because I don't think they've seen it hit their pocketbooks yet, or, you know, whatever, their wallets or pocketbooks. So more to come. Nikki, did I miss anything there?
No, yeah. I think just there's a lot of efforts towards like payment reform, like incentives like equaling the payment for that motor
right.
necessary and delivery mm-hmm. changes right, provider behavior, or providing incentives for making benchmarks. So in some states, if you have less than 5% early elective induction, then you get a bonus
So for those who couldn't hear, Nikki, there are other things happening. Other I think Louisiana is one of those states where they've actually increased their reimbursement for vaginal deliveries. Is that right? Closer to C-sections. And there's a lot coming down the pike here, too. I mean, there's that new inpatient quality reporting system requirement coming down for Medicaid. For those hospitals that take Medicaid, they're going to have to report this measure. That'll be a public measure. It'd be great if people can just go on there every quarter and look at those rates. So that's like... There are 3,000 birthing hospitals. I imagine most of them take Medicaid. So there's going to be this pressure. So anyway, I don't want to take up too much time with that. That could be another hour session. That might be a good session for next year to bring states in who are doing different things.
Really great.
Yes, ma'am.
The two states, I think, was Missouri and Wisconsin. Mm-hmm.
Janice, do we have any insight as to why they're not participating?
We have a little. In one of the states, they're interested in the initiative, but they work with many partners, so they just want to do the formal pledge. And the other one said that possibly after the election, they would be turning on.
There's some political forces at play here, but we're going to go back at them after the first week in November. Connie?
I wanted to respond to your question, too, about ECOG, just because I think that physicians are very... appreciate tools and they appreciate guidelines, and it's nice to have some indicators, but that ultimately it's hard just to sometimes reduce decision making down to those kind of elements. And they want to be able to preserve the ability to make some decisions that maybe bring in some other factors that nobody had considered before. So in their defense, I think that physicians, part of their argument was that you can over-regulate to a point where you're not bringing in new emerging issues or a combination of things that are going on that I, with all of my training, in the heat of the moment, have to make a decision.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to, it's always good to try to put yourself in their shoe mm-hmm. and understand.
So on that note, I know we're at the top of the hour. We're happy to stay for a few minutes for those who have any other questions, but I know there are other sessions you may want to get to. So thank you, everyone, for being here today.